Okay, this is side three of session 18, recorded on September 25th, 2006. I was just saying at the end of the last side that the Android meme seduction of this period, the seduction of generation Y and X, and then the Morpheus generation, is that they make these kids feel they're autonomous and not dominated by media. But they may end up in the modern version, our present version of the Stepford Wives, the Matrix pod, you know, in the movie The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
That's real individual autonomy. You're living in your own little place that's programmed and you have your own hallucinated life. Now, in general terms, I say we're already doing that because the Android meme is being really successful in seducing people in feeling that they're not controlled by media anymore because you can talk back to it. And the culture has gotten louder and noisier in terms of the audience yelling back over the last 20 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's called Vox Populi, the rise of the people's voice. And yet, it's the Android meme that's seducing people into thinking that they don't have to be afraid of media dynamics anymore. It's gone invisible. It's like there's no media anymore. Not only has everything disappeared, it includes media has disappeared as an apparent programmer.
Okay. Well, maybe people don't have to be afraid anymore. I mean, is it still a programmer, or has it disappeared?
There's a definite trend that people aren't worried about being programmed by media anymore because they are in the ground of being seduced into thinking they're independent of media. They don't mind putting on the old past of the 20th century of being programmed.
Mm-hmm.
So we put on being programmed, or in the world of 1984. As an art form, as a pastime.
Yeah. And I think people are, like, if you go out on the street with a TV camera and you, hey, come here, buddy, I got to interview you for, we're doing a consensus here, let's come on over here and talk to me. You know, people are much less self-aware, conscious.
About expressing themselves, because they know there's no public space, which is what I was talking about 45 minutes ago. What is the public space of the American meme of the family values that Bush represents? Where is that zone? Because in actual lives, people's lives, they don't think there is a public space that they have to be keep a clean nose in front of. They're not nervous about it.
Mm-hmm.
50 years ago, you'd be nervous. There was a public space that you had to be looking sane in front of, right?
Yeah.
So people are indifferent to the fact that the public space has disappeared. So they're off in their own little space, and they create their own spaces.
Yeah.
Through media.
Bush does, he represents a particular type of person, and he's bringing this kind of rugged individualist, yet he tries to show his compassionate side. But,
yeah, that's the rugged individualist as art form.
Yeah.
Knowing the disservices of the unconscious rugged individualist of the Western world of 100 years ago, now it's fine-tuned as an image.
Some portion of my generation was dubbed by, you know, Robert Bly as being the soft male.
Yeah.
You know, we were sort of brought up by mom. Dad was off at work. We were sort of raised by mom, and we were taught to become sensitive and nowadays.
We talked about this in the last session, didn't we?
Did we? I don't remember if we did or not. But today, I walked by the TV, and I think it was CNN. There was some NASCAR guy jumped out of his car, ran over to some other guy, NASCAR guy's car, literally jumped through the wind, stomped his way through the guy's windshield, pulled him out of the car, and they started beating the crap out of each other. And the news commentator was egging him on. He's going, yeah, that's what we want to see in America, fast cars and people beating the crap out of each other. That's good entertainment.
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of the energy, the kick-ass energy that Bush sort of represents.
Right, not the energy that you were molded by in the Kennedy era.
Right.
Okay, well, look at this first sentence. The Western way of life attained centuries since. Now, let's think of the cowboy Western. Let's put in the Bush meme, the American meme here. The cowboy way of life attained centuries since by the rigorous separation and specialization of the senses. Think of the cowboy on his lonely range, right?
Mm-hmm.
With his cattle, by himself, a couple other compadres. And Bush is with the visual sense atop the hierarchy. this cowboy way of life is not able to withstand the radio and TV waves that wash about the great visual structure of abstract individual cowboy man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is long gone, but as the digital media wakes up each individual, retrieves individual space, the individual Western private identity space, and also encourages every culture to celebrate its own meme, then you have the updating of what McLuhan's saying, and he would change with new media. New media come in to change the situation. That was the whole point of being in touch and understanding what things would be obsolete, which were prominent for a while, and then retrieve later. So we've retrieved the cowboy Western of life under the digital autonomy of the Android meme, and that explains why the guy is beating up the other car driver, right? That's part of the present effect of digital media, where everybody has to create their own space, because there is no shared public space anymore. You grew up in the last vestiges of the shared public space, where you had to appear soft and sensitive due to the TV effect.
It had to conform to that, yeah.
That was a TV body modality.
So you're saying you don't have to conform today to, because there's nothing to conform to.
Yes, so you have to be violent and create your own space, what Bush calls a unilateral government. You go out and assert America's identity, in America's meme, in relation to all the other cultures that are asserting their memes.
Mm-hmm.
They call it the world market, the globalized market, is a very hostile, competitive place.
Mm.
That's the clash of all these memes. So everybody is asserting their meme individually and culturally.
Yeah.
So we call it World War IV, World War III, suicide bombing. I mean, that guy running over and attacking the other race car, he could be on a suicide mission. He might get shot. I was talking to some New Yorkers the other day. In New York, you don't, you know, attack somebody generally, because they could have anything on them and wipe you out. In New York, people are very careful.
Yeah.
Because anybody, you don't know what the other person is capable of.
You don't know what you don't know what you might provoke.
Yeah, and you don't know what weapons the person's carrying. And Americans are allowed to carry weapons, basically. Right?
Yep.
So this is a description. The Western way of life that McLuhan's saying was washed away under digital body conditions has been retrieved. And that's what you witnessed on the TV today. So continuing, he says, those who, from political motives, would now add their force to the anti-individual action of our electric technology are puny subliminal automatons aping the patterns of the prevailing electric pressures. So the electric pressures, the electric weather, is making people be pro-tribal. That's from fascism, communism, and group action, or the welfare state that FDR brought in, all under the radio effect in the 30s. And so McLuhan's saying those that would be against the American meme of the individual, what was called the ugly American in the 60s, those that are against the ugly individualist American are just responding hypnotically to the new environment, just like I'm saying present sensibilities are responding numbly and hypnotically by the Android memes prevailing pressures. So he's saying that McLuhan's not for or against individual action. He's saying the different figure ground points here. Okay, so you're an automaton if you're miming the new effects of your media and you don't know what the implications are of that. A century ago, he says, from political motives, they would, with equal somnambulism, or, you know, hypnotize, they would have faced in the opposite direction. They would have been pro-individual against any group action, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the 19th century was very individualistic, hyperkinetic, industrialized, literate, visual man, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a century ago, those who were against the individual would be pro-individual in that 19th century. So then he says, German romantic poets and philosophers had been chanting in tribal chorus for a return to the dark unconscious. Now, the romantic poets, they were out of step with their time. They were against the general mechanical individualist strain of the 19th century. So they wanted, they were nostalgic for previous tribal times, and they waxed sentimental about retrieving acoustic space, or what's called the dark unconsciousness quote. What they did not see is that they were going to get the dark unconscious acoustic space retrieved in extreme with the soon-to-be radio environment, which would violate all their sense of values they thought they were holding up. So that's what he's saying here. German romantic poets and philosophers, he's not talking about those going in the opposite direction. It's those that were anti-individual in the 20th century would be pro-individual in the 19th century and still somnambulistically merge with the media pressures of their day. But then he says German romantic poets and philosophers had been chanting in tribal chorus for a return to the dark unconscious for over a century before radio and Hitler made such a return difficult to avoid. Now, maybe he may mean here that the German romantic poets and philosophers were chanting for a return to a tribal situation because they were merged with the 19th century, which was a lot more collectivist than the 18th century. The true visual values of the Enlightenment, which was the peak of the Gutenberg individualist ethos, was in the 18th century. Because in the 19th century, you have what McLuhan said, hardware communism. People could operate in shared environments, railways, steamships, travel services, newspapers, all these things. It was quite a kind of group mind already, but within mechanical, kinetic, visual, industrial man's kind of group consciousness. So I'm not sure there may be, maybe he does mean the German romantic poets and philosophers were symptomatic of the mainstream. I'm not sure about that. Or, depends on how you define the 19th century. It was a time of early mass effect, because by the middle of the 19th century, you got the telegraph. So I'm not sure about my first take on that. Either way, they're unaware of media effects coming in and achieving their wildest dreams, but beyond what they thought they were hoping for, right? Because they were unaware of the media dynamics that created a certain kind of society. So he says, what is to be thought of people who wish such a return to preliterate ways when they have no inkling of how the civilized visual way was ever substituted for tribal auditory magic? In other words, he's saying they're not aware of the media dynamics in creating culture. And by media, we mean generally communication media. But in the end, all media communicate. So whether they're bulldozers or newspapers, they're communicating. But originally, McLuhan's media studies were seen to be talking about communication media, right?
Well, how does a bulldozer communicate? What effect does it have?
It creates monoculture agriculture. Communicates a lot to farmers who had individual diverse farm rituals and habits and methods of growing. I mean, they had like 30 kinds of apples on their farms. When you bring in the monoculture, you got one apple, and the bulldozer makes that possible, and the tractor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it communicates a whole new lifestyle and a new kind of agricultural market.
Right. So bulldozer tractor is also used for creating roads.
Yeah.
And expanding visual kinetic space.
Right. So any medium has effects, so therefore that's how it communicates. But the word communication is what people think is a medium that delivers human messages and data, right?
Yeah. So
the initial thing was that people thought McLuhan was talking about communication media.
Purveying of ideas.
Right, and so they thought he was describing the effects that communication media created. But no, he was he had an expanded view of media that all media, all inventions, artifacts, communicate in terms of their effects that are not foreseen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and he's saying, though, you can understand these effects. It's not something, he's not giving up. If you understand the laws of media, you can anticipate the effects. And as we were saying, I think
you have to become very detached.
Right.
And being attached is a visual space, side effect.
Right, and I was just going to explain that when you said the word detached, that it is not the visual bias form of attachment. It's actually very involved, but not identifying with the different media environments and looking at the grounds. It's a kind of detachment, but he called it an involved end combined with detachment. The literate man is only detached. The tribal man is only involved. He said the truly civilized person today can be both detached and involved because there's so many media environments to perceive. and a rapid speed-up of their changes that you can begin to see the hidden grounds. And as we said last week, that's why he appeared like a prophet. I mean, he could predict all kinds of things.
Well, it sort of implies that not taking a point of view.
Not taking a literate point of view. When he wrote a book, he took sort of a point of view, because he used a... I say that his books write themselves, that the books are their view of what's going on from a book's point of view, or a book's media bias, but done consciously.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get to the next quote from Understanding Media, page 218. Page 35 of my book, but page 218 of the original Understanding Media paperback. He says, failure to understand the organic character of electric technology is evident in our continuing concern with the dangers of mechanizing the world. The idea of Orwellian mechanization was a projection and missing the fact that we were in an electric world which was organic. A different kind of danger, especially for mechanical cultures. Rather, we are in great danger of wiping out our entire investment in the pre-electric technology of the literate and mechanical kind by means of an indiscriminate use of electrical energy. I'm going to read that again. Failure to understand the organic character of electric technology is evident in our continuing concern with the dangers of mechanizing the world. So he's saying, we're not aware of the dangers of the electric world.
It's really electricity in this context isn't really truly organic. But electricity that's operating in apple trees and dogs and human beings is an organic force. But when we deal with electricity in media, we're dealing with circuitry. And we're routing electricity through circuits, which is, and it's kind of a mechanical process.
No, but the interactive live effect of electricity is approximating the organic nature of our first nature situation more than mechanical media. It's contrast and compare. Mechanical media are dead compared to electric media.
Yeah.
You can interact. Look at this telephone, electric telephone. We can talk to each other. You can't do that through letters. It takes it slows down, becomes
right.
Mechanical.
Yeah.
So, and when you start quibbling over the definitions and meanings of organic and relating to first nature, you're being a Western person. You're taking the ideas and meanings of our culture and its association with the word organic, and then comparing it with the idea that machines are not organic because they're made of machines.
Yeah.
Right?
It's applied in many ways, in mechanistic, you know, ways.
Well, all media are machines. We made them.
Yeah.
But if you stick with the conditioning of the 19th century view of machines, what he calls the view of the world as a mechanization, you will miss the interesting differences of the new machines, which are electric and organic. So it's a way of distinguishing between a different, older kind of machine.
Right.
And they are organic. As people more and more, as we've seen over the last 40 years, they spend a lot of time watching TV, listening to radio, as if it's real. More and more society is embedded in their electric communication media,
mm-hmm.
or
yep.
digital media, right?
Yeah.
Rather, he says, we are in a great danger of wiping out our entire investment in the pre-electric technology of the literate and mechanical kind by means of an indiscriminate use of electrical energy. Rather, we are in a great danger of wiping out our entire investment in the pre-electric technology of the literate and mechanical kind by means of an indiscriminate use of electrical energy. So he's so detached, he's not even pro the electric effect. He sees its services and disservices, and he's not out to wipe out the values of the literate and mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What? Yeah, that's good.
Okay, so he and Barry Nevitt, they called their kind of detachment a comprehensive awareness, not limited to the sense of comprehensive awareness that was visually biased. That's called objectivity. You know, the electric, the mechanical literate world,
mm-hmm.
being objective, which is so ineffectual when you have the waves of radio and TV and digital media washing over and through you. How can you be detached in that situation? But if you know that the necessary metaphor of the electric environment for the central nervous system, once you apply those metaphors and those analogies, you can acquire a way of looking at one environment through another, and that's a different kind of detachment.
Mm-hmm.
So the next quote is from W.P., War and Peace in the Global Village, a book McLuhan and Quentin Fiore, who co-designed Medium as a Massage with McLuhan the year before, in 67, but this is 1968, War and Peace in the Global Village. The subtitle is An Inventory of Some of the Current Spastic Situations That Could Be Eliminated by More Feed-Forward. Not feedback. Feedback is the electric numbness. You can talk. We're feeding back to each other. But what I'm trying to do here is show you the ground of the telephone and the digital phone, so that's called feed-forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the average person interacting with electric media today is engaged with feedback. So the comprehensive anti-environmental view we call feed-forward, anticipating the effects rather than responding tribally to the effects. Or today, in a digital situation, responding in an AirSat's individual iPod way. So this quote from War and Peace, page 89 and 90, we're going to have some more talk about the global thermostat, so you want to read it?
It may be simplest to say at once that the real use of the computer is not to reduce staff or costs or speed up or smooth out anything that has been going on. Its true function is to program and orchestrate terrestrial and galactic environments and energies in a harmonious way. For centuries, the lack of symmetry and proportion in all these areas has created a sort of universal spastic condition for lack of interrelation among them. In merely terrestrial terms, programming the environment means, first of all, a kind of console for global thermostats to pattern all sensory life in a way conducive to comfort and happiness. Till now, only the artist has been permitted the opportunity to do this in the most puny fashion. The mass media, so-called, have offered new materials for the artist, but the understanding has been lacking.
So there he's refining his idea of how to do media ecology through the global thermostat. So when he starts off at the beginning, it may be simplest to say at once that the real use of the computer is not to reduce staff or costs or to speed up or smooth out anything that's been going on. That is the usual American Western use of computer, and probably global use, where you use visual space data and do it for your spreadsheet and for maintaining property and intellectual property rights and who owns what and who owes this and that and what are your bills, right?
Mm-hmm.
All that visual space data is the content of computers, at least in his day. It was used to maintain and supposedly more efficiently do and carry on mechanical, visual, kinetic space, the old media. But he wanted to program whole environments, including, he says, terrestrial and galactic environments. Remember, he says the electric environment swallows the galaxy. That's a hard thing for people to perceive. But if they use their eye, they think they're millions of miles away. But if you realize the electric environment is boundaryless, then it does permeate over the whole galaxy. So he says, it's the computer's true function is to program and orchestrate terrestrial and galactic environments and energies in a harmonious way. That means programming different previous media environments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like a thermostat. For centuries, the lack of symmetry and proportion in all these areas has created a sort of universal spastic condition. Because people could not see the ground, because it was too slow, as they lived through them, the particular cultural media they lived in, everybody was kind of a robot, somnambulist. But it's only in the 20th century we've been getting to see the interrelations of culture and technology. So he says, for centuries, the lack of symmetry and proportion in all these areas has created a sort of universal spastic condition for lack of interrelation among them. In merely terrestrial terms, programming the environment means, first of all, a kind of console. Think of an air traffic controller. For global thermostats, a kind of console for global thermostats to pattern all sensory life in a way conducive to comfort and happiness. And I would call that programming your different bodies. Till now, only the artist has been permitted the opportunity to do this in the most puny fashion. So the Western ideal of the artist with his slack and autonomy and able to make a living out of doing what he enjoys making, right?
Mm-hmm.
That ideal is puny compared to what the artist has to do today, which is manage these environments. And of course, McLuhan was the only one who knew this. He was the only artist, he's saying. Because he says the mass media, so-called, remember the mass media, he's quibbling with whether that's the accurate term. Anyways, the mass media, so-called, have offered new materials for the artist, but the understanding has been lacking.
Why would he quibble with the term mass media?
He used to say the mass media, you could have 25 people on the planet, but if they had telephones, they'd be in a mass media environment. Mass media does not mean numbers. It means simultaneity, instantaneity, or ESP, electrified ESP. So people think mass means huge numbers, more and more people. But no, mass means instantaneous. So if we blew ourselves up and there was still the electronic environment and there was 15, 22 people left and they could be in touch with each other, they'd be inside a mass medium, which is a discarnate environment, not tribal. Tribal is maybe many, the idea is of many chemical bodies, huge numbers of crowds, right? We had nothing but crowd behavior in the 20th century. That's the content of the mass media. It's not what a mass medium is technically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Well, I remember when he said the dollar at electric speed takes on infinite mass, but that implies a slowing down to a stop, and then we're talking about a speeding up into an infinite, you know, rate of, you know, something that accelerates beyond speed itself.
No, you're not. You're missing the lecture from the lesson from a week or two ago. Remember we talked about the new inertia, tribal inertia of multi-consciousness. That's your age's total slowdown.
Mm.
Here it is. No, it's not that.
Well, today we've been talking about the speed up, and so I'm just.
Well, that's kinetic space trying to match with the electric simultaneity, and the only way you can do it is think that it's getting faster and faster. I heard Ray Kurzweil.
Well, the electrical simultaneity is the slowing down to a stop, while kinetic space is trying to speed up to catch up with the slowing down to a stop.
Yeah, it's trying to translate itself into tactile simultaneity. I heard Ray Kurzweil talking today, an old interview from 1999, talking about his new book at that time called The Age of Spiritual Machines, where he was talking about, well, everything is accelerating, and technology is just going to accelerate even more, and we'll have these amazing developments by 2020. He was using the American kinetic bias of things getting faster and faster. They have arrived at the most utopian, futuristic, spiritual condition that they ever could be already. And it leads to...
they're so fast, they're essentially all places at once.
Yeah. And so you have this situation where the simultaneity creates an identity crisis in all previous cultures. So the cultures, which can't really form themselves as a ground anymore, they retrieve the meme of themselves. So we have the clash of memes, which is the clash of previous cultural images.
Mm-hmm.
You follow that?
Yeah.
And that's the violence. That's the violence that TV brings in.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for that phrase, the tribal inertia of multi-consciousness. Just scanning back. I don't want to spend much time to see if I can see it somewhere. But remember we talked about it?
Oh, yeah.
And so you're not getting the point here when you're thinking of things speeding up. They have sped up, and that sense of going faster and faster has disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
But kinetic space will continue to speed up and make itself go faster, holeopathically, keep replaying it with better and faster speeds, as it can only do. It can only continue its own sensory modality.
Yeah.
And it will be trying to catch up with the ground.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole demand of that's everybody's mantra for the Internet. More bandwidth. What does more bandwidth mean? Faster downloads, faster uploads.
Yeah, and I would say that...
Bigger information pipelines.
Right, and I would think that they're projecting the idea of big crowds or mass onto the computer environment and therefore romanticizing, you know, more human unity, more human communication. What actually Internet does as we get more bandwidth is creates more fragmentation and disconnectivity because it allows everybody to have access to all media in their own little bubble.
Mm-hmm.
You follow what I'm saying there?
Right.
Bandwidth leads to fragmentation, you know, denser chip space leads to me able to do more with all the media that is sent to me and my own space, and I don't have to rely on anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we had, you know, 10 years ago was pretty clunky, and more mass consciousness in terms of a big crowd than we have today.
Mm-hmm.
And then the social effect of that is unilateral expression of yourself violently, as the Bush era image is supposedly mandating.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you don't have anything to match with, no space. So increased bandwidth, this was the mistake that Wired magazine made. They thought that more bandwidth, more media would bring the world together. They may not have really believed that, but that was what image they projected in the early 90s with Wired. By the late 90s, they started to project other scenarios. Oh, maybe it's going to be a fragmented world. But they still thought of it in terms of the old metaphors of a fascist world or fascist cartels.
I got to tell you this little side story. I was listening to a technology program, and they were interviewing this guy who started this internet company called Dig. And Dig has become, you know, they've got a lot of it's a very interesting sort of search engine information thing where, you know, whoever participates in it can click on news stories, and the news stories with the most clicks bubble up to the top. And but it's they have a big audience, and Time magazine put this guy's picture on the cover. He's like 29 years old. They put his picture on the cover, and the story said that he's made $32 million off of this internet company called Dig. Well, the guy was on this show talking with these other technology experts. They were just, you know, round table, and admitted that the guy that he's freaking broke. He's trying to make his rent on his little tiny apartment from month to month. He's not only, he says, I'm not only not a millionaire, I'm not a thousandaire.
Yeah.
So what is, this wasn't Time, it was Newsweek, I think.
Well, why is he worth $32 million? Why doesn't he have any of it?
He's not worth it. They say that the company's worth like $200 million and that his personal value is $32 million. And the guy says he's living from hand to mouth right now.
Well, why do they say that he's got worth $32 million?
I don't know. That's what's weird. Why would Newsweek?
Yeah, you got a clash.
I don't think it was Time. I think it was Newsweek. Why? You know, why would they put this guy on the cover and promote the fact that he's a millionaire, and it's not even true?
It sounds like they're hypnotized by the '90s dot-com bomb or dot-com gold rush. At first,
yeah.
They're still thinking in those terms.
So now, potentially, if Yahoo or Google or somebody decides that they want to buy this guy out, he could make
yeah,
that kind of
bought
money.
Out yet?
But it hasn't happened. He doesn't know if it's going to happen. And right now, he's just he's barely scraping by with his rent. So I don't, it's just a very strange that there was that much of a mismatch in terms of the magazine reports and what's actually true.
So the dot-com sensation of the 90s has become a cliche, and the Android meme, Newsweek, that aspect of the Android meme is just operating on a cliche. It's just assuming that will happen.
Yeah.
And because things, in a sense, happen so fast, they thought the guy had already arrived at there to be bought.
But they interviewed him and talked to him, and he never said he was worth $32 million. That they somehow arrived at that independent of the interview.
Okay, so Visual Space, which is the thing that's buying up everything, Newsweek works for the meme of Visual Space and money. So they're hoping to promote him so that someone will buy him up, because if you buy him up, then you work within the Newsweek meme, because all those major media owned by the same purpose. Small group, 1/100 of 1% is who made the profits in the 90s. So that 1%, that Rumpelstiltskin that owns everything, they want people to keep buying things so that it reflects back on the only owner left. All right, so the permeability of the media, and there's only one medium, the Android meme, represented by George Bush, that thing is advocating some company. Newsweek is saying, hey, buy this guy up because it'll make Newsweek rich and it'll make the guy, the Android meme that owns Newsweek, rich.
Mm.
Right? So it's feeding on itself. Mm. So I would say that they stick within that meme at Newsweek because it's the only meme that they can be. You're either a buyer or a bot. And there's only one buyer who can't buy anything other than maintain its hierarchy position of being the buyer. But there is nothing to buy, as Enron showed. Because the electric environment can't be bought, sold, or stolen. And neither can the digital environment. So that's the contradiction of wealth right now, or visual space ownership. You know, the idea of intellectual property, that's maintaining visual space meme.
Mm-hmm.
Now, probably I covered a lot of territory there, and it probably didn't make complete sense, but how was it?
That's good. I kind of took us off on a sidetrack.
Right.
I want to come back to this quote here.
Now, I just want to tell you the quote at page 31, the middle of the page. The extremely mobile individual consciousness of the print-oriented man now reverses into the tribal inertia of multi-consciousness. Now, extremely mobile, that means getting faster and faster.
Mm-hmm.
Individual consciousness of the print-oriented man now reverses into the tribal inertia of multi-consciousness. That's in the book Cliched Archetype, page 6. Okay, what do you want to go into?
Well, here where he says... Its true function is to program and orchestrate terrestrial and galactic environments and energies in a harmonious way. When he uses the word galactic environments, is he just trying to be dramatic? I mean, what the hell is he talking about, programming galactic environments?
Well, he's being dramatic about a point that he takes serious. I mean, he wrote this in his review of William Burroughs' Naked Lunch. He said, and that was in 1964, he said, the electric environment swallows the whole universe. Now, the universe is a product of the telescope, and then the electronic microscope and electronic telescopes. All those things are eye-oriented, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at visual space. And to realize that tactile space is not something you could see, then anything you could see, no matter how many technical miles it is away, is inside tactile space. That's a perceptual problem that McLuhan was always trying to deal with. He called it through the vanishing point.
Mm-hmm.
So, to really perceive this implosion is to realize that that statement, terrestrial and galactic, is what needs to be said to make people realize that the images they have in their mind of where they think they are, which was begun with Copernicus, you know, and Earth was on the edge of the universe, and the Sun was the center of our solar system, that's still eye data, and we're operating on another level when we get into the electronic extension of our central nervous system, way beyond ESP. That's why I have to say things like everything's disappeared, we've had our apocalypse 100 times over, and why I say on Eben's show last week that the whole world watching the World Trade Centers made them so humiliated they committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
These are effects we have not fully understood, and yet we have to see that's how deep it goes. Or at least if you want to understand McLuhan, and he may be right. So he means that, terrestrial and galactic environments. And we will someday. Remember in Highway, famous TV series?
69?
No, the Highway at the End of the Universe, or the restaurant at the end of, what was that called? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Route 66 is what I was thinking. Yeah, Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah, well, the character, I never read the book, but I saw a bit of the TV series years ago, and I remember the guy comes to this place, and these magicians are remaking planets that blew up.
Yeah.
So they had the technology, and with computer, electric, digital media, you can start to shape, as they say, terraform. There's a word that came out of the 80s or 90s, right? Terraforming planets.
Mm-hmm.
So McLuhan's saying you'll be able to do that. And since the future's already here, you can think of those science fiction scenarios as being here and easily done, since what brought all the future here is even more amazing than any particular future.
Mm-hmm.
Anything more in that quote you want to get into?
Well, that's good.
So, you know, the idea that you're walking around in Portland, Oregon, using your chemical body's feet and hands, it's a perception that the TV body has been added to you and that you're not there just walking around. That, to make that percept, what McLuhan's trying to do, he get rid of the image that you're walking around in some place, or that you're just limited to that, is the same effort as to get someone to realize terrestrial and the galactic images we have are puny compared to the non-visual world we're in, and find very hard to image. So what we do, we listen to it. We dance to it.
Mm-hmm.
Can't image this discarnate state. What Joy showed in Finnegan's Wake, there's no image at the ground of Finnegan's, of the book. So just as it is necessary to understand the implications of the discarnate effect on images of terrestrial and galactic environments, also it applies to the images of your chemical body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
So the next quote on page 37 of the McLuhan thread, which is the right-hand pages of my book, we come to, this is from 1949. Now, I put this quote in because McLuhan is intuiting his media ecology stance he has 10 years later by the late 50s. But this is an article he wrote in the late 40s, and it's called Psychopathology of Time and Life. And time and life are in quotes, so he's referring to the magazines. So psychopathology is kind of a Freudian world, eh? So he's talking about the violence, the psychopathology of Time and Life magazines, in a book called Seen Before You, S-C-E-N-E, Seen, The Seen Before You, A New Approach to American Culture. So he was one of the essays in this, and that came out in 1955, but it's an essay he wrote for a magazine called Neurotica, issue number 5 in 1949. So here's McLuhan, actually maybe not having the full artistic flexibility on how to deal with what was perceived as information overload at that time. So here it is, page 37, my book, and page 159 of the book Seen Before You.
So the process of renewal can't come from above. It can only take the form of reawakened critical faculties. The untrancing of millions of individuals by millions of individual acts of will, psychological decentralization, a merely provisional image,
provisional
image of how it should occur, could be formed by supposing every mechanical agency of communication in the world to be suspended for 6 months. No press, no radio, no movies, just people finding out who live near them, forming small communities within big cities. It would be agony. All psychological drugs cut off. No encapsulated thoughts or melodies. All to say that anything like this could never happen, or that it should never be allowed to happen, is a remark worthy of those mesmerized practical men who are efficiently arranging for
the obsequies or funeral.
The obsequies of our world's mind and body alike. If something like this doesn't happen, it's quite plain what will happen.
So there's, you know, that's pretty advanced McLuhan. Here he is in the 40s. He sees what's coming. This is before TV. TV's just sort of starting to show up at 48, 49, but it's not really an environment yet. Though he does, in his Explorations magazine in the 50s, have an article on the televised political conventions of 1948. So it's starting to be around, but he doesn't say television in this quote. He just says no press, no radio, no movies. But he's saying that the world's mind, the collective mind and body, it's like the chemical body, are going to be wiped out. If something like this doesn't happen, it's quite plain what will happen. So he's advocating, and he does have a bit of a flexibility. He's saying only turn them off for 6 months, right? Now, nobody listens to him. TV comes in, changes the texture of the 50s decade, so different from the 40s, which was strictly radio. Now you have the weird tactile effect of television. And then the satellite comes in. And the satellite and the computer start to give McLuhan a way of being even more sophisticated in this media fast he's advocating.
Mm-hmm.
But this just shows you how far ahead he was in understanding what the collective problems were.
Yeah.
And how to deal with them.
Well, back then he was looking at turning it all off, press, radio, movies.
Right.
And then later on he's talking about switching them off one at a time.
Yes. The differences in the movie, you could say that he may not have, He hasn't fully read Harold Innes at this point, I assume. Innes' book doesn't come out until 50 and 51, his two or three books. So that with Innes, he refines the differences in the media, and then he gets more comprehensive views. So this is McLuhan, you know, on the edge of being real comprehensive McLuhan, but maybe, unless he just knew it was too much to put in there. So he's only talking about a six-month media fast. And so he may have seen the differences in media at that time, but he was keeping them to himself. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But on the surface, yeah, this is the immature, undeveloped media ecologist. Right?
Yeah.
So I just want to read that again, because then, so I stuck that quote in there to compare to what we've been reading that he wrote 20 years later, very sophisticated global thermostat media ecology. And then we're going to come back to the late 50s again and read this Playboy interview quote, which deals with the programming. This is the key quote.
Okay, tape.
Okay, we'll continue this next session.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Bob.
Okay.